I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. If you don't graduate from high school or have an associate's degree or college degree or a vocational skill, you're going to have a tough time making a living in today's demanding economy. The high school graduation rates for African-American males that lags behind others puts them at risk. The Department of Education found the national college graduation rate for black male students was 33%. This is a critically important issue in cities like Philadelphia and Camden that have high rates of poverty. Our guest, Philadelphia City Councilwoman Janie Blackwell, wants to improve the college graduation rates for Philadelphia's African-American male students and is holding a hearing on this matter on Monday, and she joins us on Radio Times. Councilwoman, nice to have you with us on the show.
Thank you. Thank you. We're very glad to be part of this discussion.
Absolutely. What do you hope to accomplish by having this hearing on Monday?
Well, we hope to accomplish a commitment to make these numbers change. We believe that if we measure from going in from preschool on up, we believe that if we talk about these and have people come, people like David Hardy at Boys Latin and other schools that have focused on this and are making a difference, we believe that we can change these numbers. We believe that chair of the Council Committee on Education, we believe we can't take these numbers. We can't have a school and a school district like Philadelphia where the majority of the young men in schools are African American and have them scoring some of the lowest in the nation. I can't live with these kinds of numbers. And it makes me feel that we're not doing our part. We have to be responsible, more responsible, so that we can hold the school district accountable for these kinds of numbers.
In fact, you have called this a civil rights issue. Why do you say that?
It is absolutely a civil rights issue. This is the same as people who had to march Rosa Parks, this is Women's Month, who had to talk about riding on a trolley. It's the same as marching to be able to march across a bridge. It's a civil rights issue because if all children are presented with the same information in public schools, then children will generally score the same, and that's not happening.
What is the effect on the city of having, I mean, this is a city with a high poverty rate, so there's that, but also the fact that you've got so many African-American males who are either unemployed or underemployed.
Oh, it's terrible. We know. That is why we're fighting. I represent an area in Philadelphia that has the majority of the universities, Penn, Drexel, University of the Sciences. I represent the hospital, University of Pennsylvania, Mercy Catholic Medical Center, and many things, the Zoo, Wharton, Cira Center, law schools. I represent so many of these institutions, and we are really fighting hard now for CTE, children to be able to get career training and to go from that into labor jobs if that's what they want. We're fighting for that, and we're fighting for people from neighborhoods to get jobs. We have got to have before job starts and after it ends. We've got to have employment. So we're going through a lot of changes. We're in a very difficult fight because we have decided that we're not willing to live with the failing rates that we see now, and we're going to stay and stick. I've been in city council some 40 years.
I know you have.
And we are not going to live with statistics and problems with our youngsters and our next generation as we are living with now. So, you know, we'll rise together or fall together, but change is going to happen.
Final question to you. How will you know if you and the city have been successful?
How will I know if I and the city are successful? We'll know. Everybody will see that we'll have more jobs and that we'll have different standards for young black men.
Well, Councilwoman, I just increased your status there. No, Philadelphia City Councilwoman Janie Blackwell, thank you very much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, we have two area principals who are here to share some of their experiences working with their Black male students to develop some of the skills that will enable them to succeed in college or university or even beyond. And let me introduce them to you. David Hardy is founder and CEO of Boys Latin, the Philadelphia Charter School. David Hardy, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning. Also with us is William Hayes. He's principal of Mastery East Camden Middle School and a founding member of the Fellowship Black Male Educators for Social Justice. And William Hayes, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you.
David, let me begin with you. And Councilwoman Blackwell talked about Philadelphia specifically and the really bad numbers. Can you give us some of the bad numbers?
Well, we have been looking into a report that was written by a gentleman named Paul Harrington, professor at Drexel. Before he was at Drexel, he was at Northeastern University. And he was contracted by the Department of Labor and Industry to do a deep dive on how prepared our students are for the workforce. One of the things he said that students coming that are in school today, if you don't have a college degree, you're going to make $40,000 to $80,000 a year less than those who
do.
A year. Those are incredible numbers. He also, and he's going to be at the hearing on Monday that Councilwoman Blackwell's having, and I don't want to, give all his numbers.
Steal his thunder, right?
But two numbers really are bad numbers. One, African-American women, 19% college completion rate, okay? African-American males, 13%. Now, there is a difference. The African-American females from the district go to college at a much higher rate. So there are actually a lot more girls or women with degrees.
Right.
The boys go at a low rate and have a 13% success rate. When you look at that and try and project out toward the future of a community, that does not look good.
How do you see this issue, William Hayes?
So I definitely see it as a pipeline issue when we think about the experiences of Black males from K through 12 system. And so I know we tend to look at the graduation rates as a manifestation of the challenges Black males face. But these problems persist long before they arrive into high schools and even middle schools. And so we start to see some of these challenges early on.
What are these challenges? What are we? And we're talking in a city with a high poverty rate. Certainly Camden has a very high poverty rate as well. What are the challenges?
Absolutely. So I think it starts with one, considering the fact that if Black males and white males and their female counterparts are all considered equal at birth, there has to be something about the system that suggests that the gap is created. Even before they enter into kindergarten and exacerbated once they enter into the school system. And so when we think about how Black boys specifically are educated and how they are perceived in their classes, we can see that they are given much stricter, harsher discipline consequences more often, more frequently, and in a variety of settings, far more than their white counterparts. And so I think that speaks to our school norms and what we value in terms of behavior. In particular, schools definitely value compliance and sitting in order and following directives when given. And so I think when Black males don't fit into that system of values, we see a lot of challenges persist.
But do you think they don't fit in? That there's something about the way that we teach that doesn't speak to the needs of Black students, especially Black male students?
Absolutely. I think it has to do with how we as a community, how teachers, leaders view Black men, the perception of Black boys. And so I think there's a lot of research that talks about even young Black boys are perceived to be older than they actually are, far more than their white and Asian counterparts. They're also seen to act out and demonstrate more violent behavior for things that would be deemed as playful, even in early ages. And so anecdotally, at least, you can walk into a kindergarten classroom, and for many of their white and Asian counterparts, you would see kids tussling and fighting, and they would take that as just play natural for young boys, while Black boys do receive harsher consequences for similar behavior.
Your school is a school for males, for
right.
all boys.
Right, but to his point, we have a B club, a B. We have beehives and
like a BEE.
Yeah,
okay.
BEE
club. I got you.
Yeah, yeah. Please get that right.
We're on the radio, so that's what to spell things.
That's right.
But yeah, go ahead.
So we had our guys at the Haverford School presenting our bees and talking about it, and it was 500 Haverford boys sitting in that auditorium. Very polite, very attentive. Our guys did a great job. The thing was over. The headmaster from Haverford dismisses the guys. Two guys with ties and coats on, they look like really solid Haverford boys. They come right out into the aisle and start boxing. okay? And I thought to myself, at our school, we get upset when we see that. Mm-hmm. And it's the nature of boys, right? It is the nature of boys to tussle. And it makes us, in a school of all African-American boys, it makes us have to rethink everything we do. Because the fact is, you come into this with a lot of biases, a lot of opinions that you put on these children, and that's what they are. They're children. They're unformed yet. And we're putting motives on them like they're fully formed adults.
But you're talking about these negative stereotypes that are attached to young black males in particular.
That's right.
I'm looking at a headline from the Washington Post. People see black men as larger and stronger than white men, even when they are not.
That's
I think, Will, what you were talking about.
Absolutely. And so I think at a very early age, young boys of color can see how they're perceived by their teachers in the school around them. And so I think about, at least anecdotally, I was a principal in Cleveland, Ohio, of a pre-K to 8th grade school. And I could see the dramatic difference about how students perceive school early in their careers. And so thinking about kindergartners who run to the doors of school, who are excited, just as excited as any other student about being there. And by the time they get to 3rd, 4th grade, they have a very different perception and lackluster appeal for school. And I think it has to do very much with how they experience school, how they experience the adults around them, and how adults respond to their behavior.
You deal with boys all day long. Does that make sense to you?
That makes a lot of sense. President Obama, in his in the research that went into the My Brother's Keeper initiative, one of the things it said was that African-American boys, 47% of African-American boys self-identify as hating school. I mean, and that's all the way through.
and all the way through. So, I mean, the question then is, what is happening? I mean, and we're almost up in a break here, Will, but does it, I mean, obviously it matters who your teacher is. Mm-hmm. Does it matter the race of the teacher? Does that make a difference?
So, yes, I do believe that we live in a racialized country. I think race matters in many of our conversations, and so I think it's impossible to remove that circumstance. And so when we think about the majority of our teachers being white and female, which is very different from the black males in the classroom, and oftentimes are privileged to a certain standard of living outside of that, and so they don't necessarily live in the communities that they serve. And so I think that automatically creates a bias disconnect. And so when we think about the type of training and preparation for our teachers who are working with our black boys, mm-hmm. we absolutely must begin to reevaluate that. And are we setting our boys up for the best success and putting them in classrooms of teachers who are ill-prepared to teach them?
I mean, you're saying white female students are not prepared to teach black boy students?
I'm saying in large part a number of teachers, including white females who dominate the teaching staff, are oftentimes ill-prepared to handle, manage, support, facilitate, mm-hmm. develop, love, care, push, motivate, and educate the students in front of them.
Well, let's take a very short break and we'll get back to our conversation. That's William Hayes. He's the principal of Mastery East Camden Middle School, a founding member of the Fellowship Black Male Educators for Social Justice. And this organization wants to make sure that there are more black male teachers in classrooms. Also with us, David Hardy, founder and CEO of Boys Latin of Philadelphia Charter School. You can join our conversation. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join the conversation, and do stay with us. Much more after this very short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, talking with two principals, David Hardy and William Hayes, about how to help black male students succeed in high school and college and beyond. And you can call or text our comment line. It's 267-405-2006 to join the conversation. We were talking about the race of teachers right before going to the break, and I know, David Hardy, you want to respond to that. Go ahead.
Yes, and of all the teachers, I mean, only less than 10% are African American, and
I think it's like 5% in Philadelphia.
It's a little higher than that. It is a little higher than that in Philadelphia, but because Philly beats the national average, but still in Philly, it's only 24% teachers of color.
Okay,
in a district that's 70% students of color. But the other thing, though, is that only 2% of the teachers are African American males. So if we have to have an African-American male teacher in front of every African-American boy, it's some serious teacher production that needs to go on. And I don't see how that goes on when you have a 13% college graduation rate. Mm. So this is, we need to get more black males in school buildings, period. And I'm 100% for that. But anybody who teaches has to learn how to teach the students in front of them. And I think this is also a matter of teaching style, teaching pedagogy, that we have to teach people to be better teachers and more inclusively.
And I'm curious about the teachers at Boys Latin. Are they, is it a mix of?
It's certainly a mix. And African-American males are in the minority in our faculty, but we have more than 24%.
I hear you. Let me go back to you, Will, because I'm picking up what David just said there, which is in order to recruit enough teachers to teach in school, you need to have a better college graduation rate in order to have the skills to be able to teach in front of a classroom. How do we address that?
So,
and how do you make teaching attractive?
Absolutely. So that's a loaded question, right?
Sure,
there's so many things in that. And so one of the things the fellowship has aimed to do is to not just address this problem from a recruitment angle, but as a pipeline question. And so how do we begin to get students and young people, particularly young Black boys interested in education, to shift their narrative and their view of the education system and hope that they would return as teachers? And so we've piloted a protege program, which goes into schools partnering with Educators Rising to introduce young Black boys to the teaching field early and often. And so thinking about how we can shift that narrative. I think about my own experience as a young Black male growing up, graduating high school, going off to college. I wasn't pushed to be a teacher.
No.
In many cases, I was pushed to go be a doctor, lawyer, engineer. And so how do we make teaching popular? And so I think part of that is using teachers to do it. And so we do what's called the Black Men Why I Teach Tour. And so we take us young Black male educators and take them around to schools, and we express to students why we do the work that we do. And why we enjoy it so much.
So why did you become a teacher and not a doctor or a lawyer?
Right. Oh, God. That is a question that I question every day. Honestly, yeah. I fell into it. So I knew I had a passion for social justice issues and communities of color. And so I really wanted to have an impact on the world around me. And so I originally went to Harvard to be a school counselor.
Oh.
And during that time, I worked at a Boston public school with a group of young men of color who were sub-sophomores. And what that means is, you should have failed ninth grade, but we want to work with you. And so I was the interventionist assigned to that group. And so that really compelled me to really want to work in schools in a different capacity. And I saw teaching as an opportunity to have a platform to work with students day in and day out, to really support and shift some life outcomes.
Let me shift our conversation just slightly, because certainly, David, there are students, Black male students, who overcome all sorts of adversity and do well and go on to college and are successful.
See them every day.
Absolutely. And so I don't want the conversation to be about just this as if every Black male student is in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly there are some barriers and some challenges that some of these students face. I think the question is, looking at the ones who do succeed, what do they have that has helped them succeed?
I think the big thing is grit. Grit is a big, big thing. Being able to go to college, to take a failure and not be crumbled by it, to go back and learn from it and keep fighting, to reach out for resources and help when you need it, to lean back on people who had helped you in the past when you think you don't know what to do, to reach out to the right people. Those are the kind of skills. Those are soft skills. You know, I don't think intelligence is what hurts a lot of Black men in college. It's the soft skills.
Yeah.
And that was another outcome of the Obama research. It has to be, you have to get guys used to being self-starters, being taking control of their learning process. And when you do that, then you see progress from guys who maybe didn't have good backgrounds, educational backgrounds. They can grow a lot faster once they learn how to take that responsibility.
I'm thinking, though, asking for help is being vulnerable. William, is that an issue here?
Yeah, so first, I often push on this idea that it takes grit for Black men to be successful, and I understand where it comes from.
And it's kind of stick-to-itiveness. That's been sort
right.
of how it's been interpreted.
Right. But when white males succeed, we never say it takes grit for them to succeed, and for you to make it, it takes grit. And I push that because I don't want it to be perceived that struggle is somehow inherent to who you are as a Black man. And you need to own that. And the only way that you can be successful is to first struggle. And so in many cases, our struggles are attributed to the society in which we live. And so I don't want to dismiss the necessity of society changing many things that black men experience. Yes, grit is a factor, but we can't eliminate the fact that the successful black boys and black boys who are successful in college can point to very clear mentors that they had, opportunities, enrichment opportunities they had in school and out of school. They can point to teachers who pushed them. They can point to significant moments in which they failed but had an opportunity to do it again and try and do better, in which they learned grit. They learned the ability to overcome obstacles with the support of a system around them.
What you're stressing is really relationship then. I mean, someone
Absolutely.
That said, you have something and I'm going to help you develop it.
Absolutely. And so when I think about to the former point around the differences between the teaching staff versus the student population and the disconnect between race, class, and culture, that very much speaks to the relationship teachers are able to have with students. And so students must be in a space in which they trust the adult in front of them and that they feel like that adult has their best interest at heart. And so if learning is to ever be facilitated, we have to close that relationship gap between teachers and students.
You agree with that, David?
Trust is big. If you don't get trust, you don't get them cooperate. And I think that is something that is you don't learn in it in schools of education. And if you don't have a willingness as a teacher to reach out to the people you're teaching, to learn about them, to form deep relationships with them, you're not going to be able to teach them.
Mm.
We do things, and this actually came out of our faculty. We have something called video game night or movie night or karaoke night, where we'll have 100 boys in our school building on a Friday or Saturday night. And this was a teacher's idea. It's safe, it's good, clean fun, and everybody goes home and it's no problem. And it creates a safe space. And it's normally our younger guys, ninth graders and or some 10th graders, but you get some older guys who come too. They like it. But the fact is, it gives them a place to be safe on a weekend, and it gives the teachers a time to kind of be with these guys in non-threatening, non-school-related times, and it builds relationships. And that is a strength builder going into the school week.
Let me just quickly reintroduce the two of you. That's David Hardy, founder and CEO of Boys Latin, a Philadelphia charter school. Also with us, William Hayes, and he's the principal of Mastery East Camden Middle School and a founding member of the Fellowship, Black Male Educators for Social Justice. And we are talking about how to improve the graduation rates, the success rates for African-American males living and going to school here in the Philadelphia area. And again, you can join the conversation if you text or comment or call our comment line 267-405-2006. I see a lot of comments coming in here. Radio Times at WHYY.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. The New York Times this morning had a big article called The Increasing Significance of the Decline of Men. And it was about men across the board, white men, African-Americans, Latinos. But one of the people quoted in here is an economist at MIT talking about the impact of single-parent households on children. I don't know if this is true or not, but he said relative to their sisters, this would be African-American girls, boys born to disadvantaged families have higher rates of disciplinary problems, lower achievement scores, and fewer higher school completions. Do you think boys growing up in single-parent households are at greater risk than girls, David?
I think so. For one reason is because people say that if you're born in a single family household, you're in trouble. So you're walking in the door in trouble. I don't think there's a clear distinction between single parent family kids and people with two family kids. I think the educational level of the household has a lot to do with what happens. One of the things we know is that a boy with a single parent, where the mom might have a college degree or a master's, has more of a chance of going to school than a guy with two parents where neither parent graduated from high school.
So sort of degrees beget degrees. You want to weigh in on that as well?
Yeah, so it's very personal to me. So I did grow up in a single parent home.
So did I.
And so my
obviously that's right. Speaking broadly.
Right. And so I think my story does serve as a kind of narrative to just this idea that the absence of black fathers is somehow an additional detriment to the lives of black boys. And so we don't devalue the role that the black man plays in the child's life. But the New York Times did put out an article last year that talked about this myth that the black fathers are absent. And so while they're not married to black mothers, they are very much present. And on many indicators, black fathers demonstrate much more quality behaviors of fatherhood than their white and Asian counterparts, and that they spend more quality time with students, not necessarily in a financial means, but actually in the time spent. So whether that's, you know, pickups, drop-offs, whether you were spending time athletically outside of the home. And so I think we must push back on that narrative, and I think we also need to value the role that black fathers can play while not necessarily married to the black mother.
But the role of parents, I mean, in any child's education is critical.
Absolutely. And so I think when we look at parenting, Hillary Beard's work around parental styles is very important for schools to look at. And so when we think about successful parental styles for black boys, it comes out of a time in which black boys were taught you need to be very quiet, polite, and a system that will kill you for looking in the wrong direction, for stepping outside of your lane. And so when black boys are faced with that type of style of do as I say so that you are safe, that in many ways can be a mismatch to what they experience within schools. And so I do see that white students are often given the privilege to advocate for themselves, to push back in a way that is otherwise disrespectful for black boys to do in school.
So the idea is out in the world, you know, be careful, be safe, don't do this, don't look at people, don't respond to people. You're saying in the classroom, that makes a young black male look like they're not interested.
And so I hear it, and so this I hear when I talk to my black boys, this idea they somehow must be controlled. And so I think it speaks to a fear, inherent fear we have about how we perceive black boys. And anything that is deemed to be uncontrollable is unsafe and therefore a threat and therefore a cause for discipline.
Go ahead, and I want to read a bunch of comments here.
Yeah, we talk about self-control because that's the only kind of control that works. And if you can control yourself, you're fine. If somebody else has to control you, you're in trouble anyway. So I think teaching young men how to purport themselves, I mean, that's important.
But do you agree with what Will was, or I'd be curious what you say. I mean, what Will is saying is that for many young black males, they're told in public you have to be a certain way, otherwise you are perceived as a threat. But that might not work in the classroom.
Well, what I find is that people want to put on young black boys what happened to them when they grew up. And, you know, like, don't be a punk. Don't go, you got to go out and fight. You know, you don't have to do that. Or watch out, they're out to get you. Maybe they're not. You know, I think it's always important to teach them how to function in the environment that they're in, right, not what you think that they're going to face.
So, and we all live in so many different kinds of environments, instead of knowing what works where. Is that is that, how critical do you think that is, Will?
And so I think it speaks to how we educate black boys. And so one of the things, I work for a charter school, but I often push back on this idea of no excuses charters, and this idea that we have to have strict, rigid discipline systems that seek to control students. And so we have to think about, what does that produce? Does that produce leaders and thinkers who push back on systems? Absolutely not. It produces rule followers and those who follow the status quo. And so when I think about the systems we say are most appropriate for boys of color and the systems we decide, like a Montessori model, that are most appropriate for suburban and affluent communities, where they get the idea to freely decide what they want to learn, to go into spaces as they choose. And so we deny black boys very early that spirit of choice, that self-discovery and identity very early. We control who they are in hopes that they don't disrupt the status quo.
Let me read a comment from Michael. He says, what about the problem of looking down on education as uncool? I mean, this is something that has been said before, white, right? What do you say to that, Will?
So I know too many black male scholars to say that they think that being scholarly and being educated is acting white. And so I don't own that. I don't even adopt that narrative. I think what we can do is begin to value education and schools a lot more. I think this country has an assault upon teachers who do this work daily. I think that teachers are scapegoated in many ways for the failures of our society. And so that causes schools to be uncool. I think that schools that are underfunded, schools that are not necessarily kept up, poor facilities, under-resourced, that makes schools uncool. And so a child's experience in schools makes it uncool.
That's interesting. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, but the other part is that we have teachers who've been sitting in classrooms for 20 and 30 years watching failure and not doing a doggone thing about it, not changing anything, getting paid, retiring. That's got to stop. And I think that parents and community people have to not tolerate that. You know, everything that happens in a classroom is not the teacher's fault. But the teacher's there with the students all day, and that's their job to teach. And if there are things at home that aren't gone, that there's no cooperation, it's the teacher's job to reach out and try and make those relationships so that can work, and not to go and complain about the parents' lack of cooperation. Mm-hmm. I really feel, you know, I think that, yes, there has been an assault on teaching, and I think to some degree it's unfair. But to some degree, teachers have kind of sat there and let this thing happen. And it's been more, all the teaching stuff we hear about is about funding. And it's not all about funding. It's about attitude. It's about commitment. And those are things that can change without funds.
What do you think, Will?
And so I'm very intentional about not just saying money. And so I often say resources. And so we think about resources from a holistic standpoint. I'm talking about not just teachers, enough teachers to create smaller classroom sizes, enough social workers so that kids can so their mental health needs can be responded to, enough after-school programs to be able to extend the school day beyond just the regular 3:30 to actually provide some of these enrichment opportunities, enough resources to make sure kids in city schools have as much access to arts, band, dance as their suburban counterparts. And so when I think about resources, it's to provide our students with a comprehensive education that many teachers are actively trying to do within their classrooms. To your point, David, I do agree. Teachers are our worst critics. No teacher ever told me go into teaching.
Is that right?
And so I made my way all through K-12. And so in many cases, when you ask teachers about their job, they're not necessarily the biggest advocates for the role and why you should get into it.
Well, I tell you, I want to pick up on that, but we have a very short break coming up. That is William Hayes, and again, principal of Mastery East Camden Middle School, a founding member of the Fellowship, Black Male Educators for Social Justice. And they are in a recruitment campaign to get more black male educators in the front of the classroom. David Hardy, founder and CEO of Boys Latin of Philadelphia Charter School. And both of our guests talking about the specific needs for African-American male students, what they need, how they are perceived, and what success can look like. You can again join our conversation by calling or texting our comment line 267-405-2006. A lot of comments here. Radio Times at WHYY.org. Tweet us, WHYY Radio Times, and do stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, talking with two area principals, David Hardy and William Hayes, about what young black male students need in order to graduate from high school, from college, and beyond. Let me read a couple of comments here. Listener from Stone Harbor, have you polled the African-American males? What are their thoughts, or specifically, why do they think these rates are so poor? You both spend, days with all day long with students. And I'm curious, David, what do young black male students at Boys Latin tell you?
We don't have those poor rates, so I don't know. Our guys seem to do all right. The whole idea that college is what they're supposed to do, we start from that at the door, that we're here to prepare you for college. Their parents put them in the school because they want them to go to college. You know, that's what they hear from sixth grade now all the way through. So we have a very high enrollment rate. We have a high persistence rate. And it's because they've been hearing the message all the way through that this is where you're supposed to go.
How about for you, Will?
So I've
what do the students, I guess, tell you about their lives?
Right. So my entire background has been around in turnaround schools, particularly, and so now Camden. I work at a Renaissance school, and so that's a traditional district school run by Mastery Charters organization. And so in that experience, I think that even the teachers can articulate that there are challenges that black boys face that exist and persist far outside of the classroom. And so what they see in the classroom is a result of what these students have experienced. So when we think about the role of trauma, particularly in areas of high concentration of poverty, and the role that plays on students and their outlook on life, their aspirations and their expectations for their lives. And so while students may be able to articulate a goal, they don't necessarily expect that goal to be true, given their experience. And so when you think about students who are seeing violence at a high rate, drugs, crime in the cities around them, many would liken that to what you see as evidence in post-traumatic stress disorder. The challenge is the trauma never ends. And so when you think about that in your classroom, learning becomes secondary. And so the other piece is that
you're saying the students are traumatized.
Absolutely. And so I know that particularly in Camden, our school does a lot of work around trauma-informed care and what that looks like in the classrooms and the role the teacher has to play. And so there's a lot of work around the neurological function that occurs and the detriment as a result of trauma. And so we also think about living in a racialized society and the role, the image of black men in our mainstream society. Students are faced with that. And so when you think about their life outcomes and the goals they have, they haven't necessarily been sheltered to the identity as the predator, the identity as the violent one, the identity as the dropout. And so in many cases, we perpetuate this narrative. When we say black boys are the problem, and so why are black boys so hard to educate? We perpetuate this narrative of a deficit-based mindset of black boys. We don't say, why is our system so wrong for black boys? Hmm. We don't say, why do black boys face so many challenges in our system? We say, what's wrong with them? And so those are challenges they inherit. And so when we think about internalized racism, our students are getting that at a very early age.
Do you think that you're a single-sex school?
Yeah, and I think that makes a difference. I mean, our school is 99% black boys. So the valedictorian is a black boy. Salutatorian is a black boy. Everybody on the National Honor Society are black boys. Everybody who does everything academic, athletic, co-education, or co-curricular are black boys. So this whole idea that there's somebody else who can be better than you, there's nobody else there. Hmm. We have to be the winners.
And I commend that because my first experience, I went to Morehouse College, which is an all-male African-American college. And it was the first time that I had been in a room with such a diversity of black men. And so because the mainstream narrative is so stereotypical and so narrative, black boys who aren't privy to a school like Boys Latin don't get to see that. Yep. I got, for the first time, to sit in a room with 15 valedictorians who were all male and black. Black men who spoke multiple languages, black men who had traveled across the world. And that was my first experience in college. And so when you think about the primary experience of black boys, it's not the Boys Latin experience. And I'm thankful for that and know some of your students who go there. It's a great opportunity. And so we have to begin to provide that in schools that don't necessarily look like Boys Latin.
You mentioned something right before the break, and I wanted to swoop back, and then I've got some calls I want to play and more comments as well. So how do you get more black male students into the classroom?
And so I
point the pitch, I
right,
guess.
I go back to the councilwoman's pitch of it being a civil rights issue. And in the civil rights issue during that time period, there was an expected struggle of the people who could struggle. And so everyone wanted to be an activist because it was necessary for our people. And what I'm arguing is that the education and success of our black boys is necessary for our people. And so it's going to require some activists to get into the classroom. And so the pitch is one for social justice. And so when we talk to black men about their role in society and the idea to do something great, it's in the classroom and it's through the students that come in front of you. And so we push this idea of a civil rights mandate without the civil rights struggle of the adults who can do something about it. When we talk about teaching and the failure of black boys, no one's saying, hey, let's get into the classroom. Let's go learn to be better teachers because I'm, you know, in business. I'm a medical doctor. I'm a lawyer. Now the classroom needs me. Let me go qualify myself to work in the classroom.
Do you see it as a civil rights issue?
I think it definitely is a civil rights issue. And I think that one of the things the councilwoman's going to do is to make these outcomes a lot more public. And like she said, she can't sleep at night. Neither can I. I mean, we grew up here in this city, and to see this kind of carnage, this educational carnage, and it's just not going to work. And I think that one of the things we do is we present these numbers by percentages most of the time, and it's all buried in a whole big book of numbers. We need to make sure that people know. Every year at this school, how many of their kids went to college? How many of those kids made it to a second year? How many of those kids graduate at this high school or whatever high school there is? Because here you're going to find out some things that every high school doesn't provide the same curriculum. There are schools in this city where you have a hard time getting a fourth year of math in high school or a second or third year of a foreign language in high school. Those are things you need to go to college. And if you don't have them, You're not gonna do well. The other thing is, I'm really big on extracurricular activities because it expands your school day. There's a guy at Penn named Torch Lytle, professor at University of Pennsylvania, who wrote about the achievement gap and said it's really a time gap. He said you take a student who goes to a typical neighborhood high school. They go to school 5 days a week. They have 80% attendance, so they're really only making it four. school goes from 8 till 2:30. They have no connection with the school after that day is over. You compare that to somebody who goes to, say, Episcopal Academy, who has about 70 hours worth of work and school-connected things all day, you know, a week. A 25-hour commitment prepares you to work at Walmart. 60-hour commitment prepares you to do greater things. So we need to expand the day and get more education in it.
Makes sense to you, Will?
Absolutely. It does. It's ideal. It's a desire. But the reality is I actually have two teacher openings right now, and not for not wanting to hire. The reality is I teach two classes as the principal, and I coach track as the principal. And so I don't want to, you know, undermine that there is a necessity and there's a teaching shortage. And so we need more people. And yes, I desire more people of color to go into the teaching profession. And so I think that if you speak to most leaders, they see that as valuable. They see that as important. Yes, we want to extend the school day. And yes, I'd love for my kids to have every opportunity and enrichment activity. The reality is we have to prepare people to fill those positions, and we have to actively recruit people to fill those positions. And it won't be possible for our black boys if we don't do that work of finding the people to service them.
Let me play some people that called into our comment line. This is Kelsey.
My name is Kelsey. I'm calling from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And I'm curious as to how the guests understand this push for black male success in schools when they're both working in charter schools, and specifically Mastery, which is known for having severe discipline policies for black males. Thank you.
You want to speak to that, Will?
Absolutely.
That's the principal of a Mastery school. Go ahead.
And I get this all the time, and particularly on the Philadelphia side. So one, I want to be very clear. This is actually my first charter experience, and I chose to come to Mastery because Mastery was committed to the neighborhood schools model. And so this idea that they would not necessarily cherry pick and choose their students, but they would create a school that could be replicable by a district. And so you think about my school in particular, it's 30% special ed students and 10% ESL students, which very much mirrors Camden City School District. And so while Mastery's policies prior to my coming did very much mirror the No Excuses Charter policy, Mastery has definitely invested and committed to a new model of what they call 3.0. This idea of educating the whole child and being very much trauma-informed and really having an attention to the cultural context in which we educate students. And so when people speak to me, again, I'm new to Mastery, relatively 2 years, I don't know that experience. And so in many cases, I push them to ask more questions, to visit more schools, to see what Mastery actually is. And if you actually look at Philadelphia, the majority of black males are being educated by charter schools, and that begs the question, why? What experiences, what types of schools are necessary to facilitate the development and support of black males, particularly in the city of Philadelphia? I'm not tied to charter public. I am tied to a neighborhood schools model. I am tied to successful schools for all students. I'm tied to the best education that a family can find for their child. And I'm an advocate for traditional public schools as well, and I want them to do great as well.
What do you think about the sort of no excuses idea? Now, I don't want to set this up as public versus charter.
Right. Right. Yeah,
I think that's a lost conversation.
I think the no excuses message got lost. It turned out to be no excuses for the kids. I always thought it was no excuses for the people who ran the school. If you do it that way, I'm for a no excuses model. If you do it blaming the kids, then no, I'm not for a no excuses model, because I think that's ridiculous. But the fact is that one of the things I know is that innovation normally comes from the charter sector. You don't see the district creating new innovative schools, doing things different. That's hard to do in the traditional public setting, to go out and do things a different way. So charters have been the innovation engine in public education over the past few years. The question has to be asked, why aren't we learning from each other? And there is no appetite.
There are models of success,
yeah,
right?
There's no appetite. And I've been in this charter movement since the first charter school opened on the first day here, and I've not seen any appetite for really understanding what is successful in charter models or in district models. I went and had a conversation with the principal of engineering and science. And one of the things we found is we have a lot of the same challenges. We're doing a lot of things the same way. There's things we can do to help each other. But nobody ever reached out to say, hey, let's have a conversation.
And I think that's necessary. And so one of the pieces, I don't walk into my school and say, hey, I'm so excited about these charter kids. No, I walk in and I see kids. I see my young students in front of me and their hopes and wishes that I'm supporting and facilitating. And so one of the work, the things that the fellowship has been intentional about is not making this a charter versus public thing. Right. We are really trying to increase the number of Black male teachers in all classrooms and in all schools. And so that has created opportunities to partner with the district. And so Dr. Hyde will be actually at our job fair next week on March 25th, in which we are inviting Black males from around the country to come and interview for positions. There'll be 20 organizations represented to do the hiring, Mastery, the district, Camden City Schools included. Myself, I've been intentional about getting into some of the Camden City schools around me, traditional public schools, charter schools, private schools, to see the best practices. Mm-hmm. I think David's point is very clear. We need to share the best practices across schools.
And just to add, I know here in Philly there are efforts to create community schools so that schools are not just places where kids go to school, but where all sorts of other things happen as well, making it more a hub to a local neighborhood.
You know, Sharif had an article in the paper about 2 months ago about that, about the low percentage of African-American males. And when I read it, it was a Saturday morning. I sent him an email or a text at that time, and he knows that. And I said to him, where are these men coming from? We're going to have to go out of town to get them. And like you said, we're going to have to recruit around the country because we're not making them here. That's not going to be a sustainable model until we start producing more African-American male college graduates here. You know, I'm glad you came from Cleveland. I'm glad you came back from the East Coast.
I think you're saying don't leave either, right?
But we need more guys. We need more guys here.
And I agree. And I think where we're missing, they're actually in our own backyard. So I have so many paraprofessionals who work in a school that if it took a few more credits, they could get teaching certified. Mm-hmm. So many young Black males who work in after-school programming, who partner with us, who already work in education, but could actually get certified to teach.
In fact, a comment from Jeff, how can teacher training programs be held accountable for addressing the issues brought forth in this morning's program? Sort of shifting a little bit what he's saying, which is how do we train teachers so that they are prepared and can stay in the classroom and make the kind of difference that we've been talking about.
So I agree. I think that documentation beats representation any day. And so I think we need to begin to monitor what these graduate schools are actually putting out. And so when we think about last year, 28 African-American males came from schools of education to teach out of the entire state of Pennsylvania.
Wait, say that again.
28 Black males graduated from schools of education ready to teach in the state of Pennsylvania.
In the state of Pennsylvania.
Yes. That's problematic.
I'd really like to know how many of that 28 were from Pennsylvania.
Right.
That would be an interesting thing.
And so when you think about that type of those numbers being put out, but even more than that, what is the quality of the teacher that they put out? And so when we think about if teachers are being held accountable to so many different variables and factors, are we monitoring the success of teachers from each school? When I worked in Boston, we knew which schools produced the best teachers, even if anecdotally. Principals knew you could go to this school and get a quality teacher because their record speaks for itself. I don't necessarily know if Pennsylvania has that type of system and knowledge of the best teachers come from this school and there's a report about it. Teachers who are most successful with students of color come from this school and there's a report about it.
So we need data. We need information.
Data is very important and because anecdotal stories get you in trouble, and what you need to see is not just information about who's coming in, but what the outcome was.
Let me read some comments. We'll have no time to talk about it, but Ron says, I've worked with Black youth for over 20 years. I would like to see entrepreneurship taught in grade school. A text from a listener, what about peer-to-peer influence and support? A tweet from Matthew, Black men higher rates of stops, arrests, sentences, worse criminal records. I just want to throw one very quick thing out, which we won't have a chance to really discuss, but I think it's a myth that needs to be buried, which is that there are more Black males in the criminal justice system than in higher education.
It's not true.
Not true. Yeah. Exactly. And I just wanted, I meant to bring this up earlier, only because this is something that has been floating around for a long time.
Oh, that's a nice line. Sounds good, but that's not true.
It's not true. Fair enough. David Hardy, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
My pleasure.
And William Hayes, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes and you can find out much more about this program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook and follow follow us on Twitter, and we took a little video before the program began. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Trinae Nuri. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us.